formation. He's going for the corner. He's got it. Texas is back. The kicker comes through.
We're back. We are indeed back with another episode of Fire Tom Herman, your overreactionary Texas Longhorns football fan podcast. I'm Josh, he's Noah, and today we're completing the 2019 preview by talking about the defense, including players to watch and the positional battles taking place during fall practice. We'll also talk about our expectations for each unit heading into the season as they look to replace quite a bit of senior leadership and experience. Finally, we'll close by talking about the second half of the season and calling our shot, so to speak, on the final six games of the 2019 schedule. If you haven't already listened to our preview covering the offense and the first six opponents on Texas's schedule this year, definitely check that episode out as well. So, Noah, fall camp continues on with an absolutely wild recruiting season currently raging around it. So, what's on your mind? What are your first thoughts?
Well, my thoughts start, I think, where everybody else's are, and that this is just going to be a really interesting defense to watch, given the amount of seniors that graduated last year and the amount of young guys, probably more talented than the seniors that are now stepping in. So it's going to be young, I think. Overall, like, my impression is that it'll probably be a little bit similar to last year, where at times it's elite and at times it's not. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see who steps up and what kind of plays they're able to make.
Yeah, and I know a lot of Texas fans are just tired of hearing about the narrative of not having experience returning, losing a whole bunch of starters, despite the fact that a lot of those young guys did get some pretty significant snaps, especially in the case of the Sugar Bowl, where you had guys like Joseph Osai as the leading tackler, despite the fact that he was just a freshman last year. So a lot of youth coming in, a lot of experience. All things considered, even if they weren't given the starts and didn't get that stat to show on their stat line. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of guys that need to step up with the entire defensive line, the entire starting linebacking core, and both starting outside corners and actually our starting nickelback all either graduating or just moving on.
Yeah, I agree that it is a bit overrated to talk about like the number of starts lost and the number of seniors and everything. But at the same time, it's difficult to count this many second-year guys to step in and play at the level we need them to in order to be a good defense in the Big 12. You know, it's a difficult conference to play defense in. A lot of the offenses really put guys in tough binds where you're having to make really fast decisions, and if you make the wrong one, you give up a touchdown, you know? And that kind of stuff just comes with experience. So that's why I kind of mean that I think we'll see. There are definitely going to be some downs at some point throughout the season, but overall, I think that we'll be all right.
Yeah, and I think there's that sort of reaction that Texas fans have had to national media or rival fans talking about the youth on the defense. I think they sort of overreact in the other direction and think that just because the raw talent on this defense with the guys that are coming in is better than the guys that just exited the program, that suddenly it's just going to make us elite when it's very rare that you see just raw talent trump experience by that significant a margin, especially when it's that much experience. But I still think there's a lot of reasons to be hopeful. But let's get started talking about one of those units where sort of the attrition of those guys leaving hit pretty hard last year. You had Charles Omenihue, Chris Nelson, and Brecken Hager were really kind of your starting front three. This year, we're kind of looking at Malcolm Roach, Keandre Coburn, and Taquan Graham in those positions.
Yep, and I mean, like you said, it's the place where all three of our guys left last year, but it's also the place where I think that you can actually see improvement coming in with the youth. I am a big fan of Keandre Coburn. I think that he might be the most important player next year in terms of a guy that if he makes a big jump, could really raise the ceiling for the defense. And the reason I kind of think that is I think Wilbon is more of a continuation of Chris Nelson, where he's really solid against the run. He'll occasionally draw double teams there, but he's not much of a threat against the pass. Whereas Coburn, if he can be a disruptor and create penetration and off-schedule plays, he can actually more consistently draw double teams, which allows our defense to move into more of those packages where we're able to put more defensive backs on the field, right? Because if Coburn is taking up two blockers, then that's one less offensive lineman that's going to be trying to come down on Caden Stearns, you know. So he, in my mind, is the guy that's going to kind of set that ceiling for the defense, in a place where we could actually look for improvement from a younger player.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you talk about Coburn's ability, not just in the run game, but in the passing game, to be able to pressure the passer. And they've talked a little bit during the availabilities about having actually Malcolm Roach sort of slot in on as like a third down defensive tackle, just be sort of the pure pass rush in those third and long situations. But I agree. I think Coburn's ability to sort of be that everything defensive tackle gives us the opportunity to not necessarily sort of telegraph to the offense what we're going to be doing with the defensive line. With Coburn, you kind of have that that security to where you can turn to that package in downs where it is more reasonable to believe that they could run the ball. But to have two guys, I guess, really, in Malcolm Roach and Keandre Coburn, who can both play that third down defensive tackle and still effectively rush the passer, I think would be huge. So that's definitely something I'm looking for out of Keandre Coburn, is how he does affect the passing game. A lot of the guys have sort of compared him to Puna. They see a lot of Puna Ford in him. He's got more size than Puna, I think. He's more in that sort of traditional mold of that big defensive tackle. So if he can be that same level of disruptive as Puna, I think that opens up a lot for Malcolm Roach, who is sort of the senior leader in that front seven now. Gives him more room to not have to shoulder the entire load of that defense.
Yeah, he and Puna are definitely built really differently. I think that Puna is like a really... he's a hard guy to make comparisons to, right? Because there just aren't that many defensive tackles that are like 5'10 and are really good. but it's really more that impact that they're having on the defense where we're hoping to be able to make comparisons. And yeah, like you said, like yeah. We're hoping to free up Roach. Like, the defensive line really struggled last year to get a pass rush. That's why we had to blitz defensive backs so often and mix up our linebacker blitzes as well. And we lost the one defensive lineman that was really good at getting to the quarterback. And I don't think that... I mean, I think that Omenihu is a really big loss. I don't expect Roach or Graham to be able to replace that next year. I think they'll both be solid. Like, if we're using a 1 to 10 scale, I think they could both be 7s, you know? But Omenihu definitely was really important as a for his ability to disrupt and get in the backfield last year.
Yeah, definitely. And even for Charles, it seemed like last year he kind of started slow those first few games. He really wasn't getting to the quarterback any better than anyone else on the defensive line. And really sort of got it rolling right around the time of the Kansas State game. It seemed like he sort of picked it up and put together a solid performance. So at the very least, if we can get that consistency spread out more over the season, it would be nice to see that. And this is definitely a situation with like Taquan Graham. I think he'll be more than replaceable. Or more than a worthy replacement to Brecken Hager, for the fact that he's not going to be caught putting his foot in his mouth during press conferences.
Getting blown off the ball, like or over pursuing, and yeah, he should be fine.
Yeah, he's not going to be the easy target for Aggies and Sooners on Twitter. You're not going to see Taquan Graham having to shut down his social media because people are throwing shit back in his face for him trying to make these wild, outlandish predictions like he did a bunch of hallucinogens and saw the future. The next one that we got a whole lot of replacement to cover is at linebacker. Gary Johnson's gone, who was really sort of the anchor of that linebacking group last year. You saw him in the Sugar Bowl and in the Big 12 title game. He had a real big impact getting to the quarterback, as well as just sort of patrolling center field, I guess. He's going to be the one that's real tough to replace, because the other guy who was sort of the staple was Anthony Wheeler, who's one of those linebackers who, for the most part, his issues weren't due to lack of effort or even just sort of raw ability. He's just one of those guys who was built in that mold that would have been more successful as sort of the thumper middle linebacker that you see on Big Ten defenses and SEC defenses. This year we're looking at Jeffrey McCulloch finally stepping into a bigger role. He's had small flashes here and there. You've also got Joseph Osai, who's going to operate primarily as your B-backer, but just due to the athleticism, that's going to be a guy where when we do have those just two regular linebacker sets, he's still going to be on the field because we have so much talent already at B-backer and not a whole lot at the regular linebacking positions. But I think a lot of eyes are going to be on those two just because you don't necessarily have the raw confidence that you do in a Keandre Coburn, where you think he's going to come in as a freshman and have a huge impact. Like I said, Osai flashed in that Sugar Bowl, led the team in tackles. I think he also had a good game against Iowa State, but there's still a certain amount of where it feels like those are flashes and you want to see that get put together more with Osai.
Yeah, definitely. He came on as the year went on, and I'm expecting him to excel next year, honestly, that B-backer spot. I think that he showed enough at the end of the year, even if it wasn't at the beginning. I think a lot of that is just kind of getting acclimated. And he talked in his one of his availabilities after a fall practice about like the confidence he was able to take from that performance at the end of the year. So I'm expecting him to be pretty good. Regardless of any inconsistency we might see, he's probably the best pass rusher on the team. So for that alone, I think he's going to be really important. If he's able to actually slide inside of that MAC position, that could be a really big development for the defense, just because we aren't really sure about what else we have there. We have Dele Adeyewe, but we're not really sure if he's going to be able to improve on Anthony Wheeler's performance last year. They might be kind of similar players. And even McCulloch, last year I was actually really high on him whenever he was playing on that outside B-backer position. Not as much whenever he slid inside, but I know that he lost a lot of weight over the offseason. He looked faster and more agile in the spring game. And if that's the case where he added some athleticism by shedding some pounds, then like he could do really well as a linebacker. And I mean, we need him to. So it's definitely the biggest question mark. I think it could cause some issues for us in terms of pass defense, guarding running backs out of the backfield, and having some larger holes in our zone over the middle. But that's not, at this point, that's something that we're kind of used to. And I think that with a year of film to watch, Orlando might be able to come up with something to help mitigate some of that.
Yeah, and you talked about with McCulloch sort of playing a lot of B-backer before this year. I think that feeds nicely into the discussion that the coaches have had. Todd Orlando's touched on it. Herman's talked about it, about getting the best 11 guys on the field for the defense, and specifically talking about sort of a package that would be a more or less a 1-2-8, one defensive lineman, two linebackers, and eight defensive backs. Having McCulloch and Osai out there, two guys who can play B-backer, effectively makes them, in that sort of 1-2-8 package, those two guys effectively become the two rush ends. And it would be mostly applied on third down. You'd have a guy like Malcolm Roach or Keandre Coburn as your rush tackle, and then you have the rush ends from those linebackers, and then you just have all that speed in the secondary. And you have one of those guys who fits that mold that's sort of the tweener, where you have your joker or your rover, where they can more or less slot in as another defensive back, sort of playing that cover linebacker situation. I feel like both McCulloch and Osai having that pass rush ability really is what ultimately opens up that option to get that athleticism in the secondary, which is such a strength of this team.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we got a lot of quality outside linebackers. So moving forward, even beyond 2019, I mean, none of those, we're talking about the upcoming season here, but it should be a strength moving forward. So I think that we'll see them get multiple guys on the field at the same time, even if it is just for moving Osai inside for now.
Our next spot that we're sort of going to have eyes on, again, with losing all the talent, Devontae Davis, Chris Boyd, PJ Locke, is going to be your cornerbacks and also sort of throwing in your nickelbacks. At corner right now, we got really two spots. You got your field and your boundary corner. Two spots, and it sounds like from how fall practice is going, we've got three guys who are all going to be fighting for playing time, and not because we're lacking in ability there, but because we have three guys who sound like they can develop into extremely good corners if they're not already there. We've got Anthony Cook, Jalen Green, and Deshaun Jameson, who switched from playing slot receiver last year, played defense in high school. We were lacking at slot receiver, so we brought him across to the other side of the ball last season, but he's back playing cornerback for us. We got those three guys all competing for those two spots, and depending on what day of the week you check the practice reports, it could be any of those three guys, and also sort of Kobe Boyce thrown in as a fourth name competing. And then at nickelback, you've got B.J. Foster and Josh Thompson. B.J. Foster notably sort of played really the joker role last year and showed enough in his coverage ability that there are, the coaches are pretty comfortable putting him at nickelback as well. So again, a lot of athleticism there. And then with Josh Thompson, you've got a guy who's played nickel quite a bit, though some Texas fans have been hot and cold on his play. I mean, those positions right there, those are a huge battle for guys with a lot of talent and really who represent the future of this defense, not just this year, but next year at a minimum.
Yep. I remember during Anthony Cook's commitment, he went with, for the next 3 years, he'll be playing at the University of Texas. So, I mean, he knows that he's good. Apparently, he's a little bit inconsistent with that right now, but I expect him to be pretty good at the field corner. He was fine last year, but, I mean, he was a true freshman. He has a full year of development now. So, sorry, I think I said field, but on the boundary corner, the short side of the field, I think that he'll be good there. And that the opposite side, on the field side, was a really big question mark for me for this defense. Over the offseason, whenever I was feeling a little bit more down on the defense than I am now, a big part of that was because I wasn't sure what to expect out of that second cornerback. But it sounds like Jalen Green has really taken a hold of the job, is playing really well, doing fine against our great receiving core. So I'm expecting big things from him this year. And then, yeah, DeShawn Jameson, pretty good as well. As far as the nickelbacks go, I don't know that Foster is a better nickelback than he is safety, but I still think that he can play the position. I think that he can do some things much better than PJ Locke, mainly the blitzing, setting the edge, and all that kind of like run and screen support stuff. But I'm not really sure what to expect from him in coverage. I'm not expecting him to be bad. You know, he is fast enough to keep up with guys. But I do think that he might struggle some with some of those like quicker slot receivers that are kind of are all over the Big 12.
Yeah, I think the real value of having B.J. Foster in that nickel role is it just keeps him closer to the line. And I think that his value and his physicality really makes him valuable as support for the run game. Keep him close to the where the snap is, closer to the actual line, gives him that ability to have a bigger impact than he would if he was sitting back as a deep safety.
I think that's true. I do think that we should be prepared for a little bit of disappointment when it comes to B.J. Foster. And it's not even because of his level of play. It's just because the nickelback is such a demanding position in our defense. Like, they're asked to do so much all the time that it's hard for somebody to really excel in that role. I don't know if that makes sense, but I think that some people
I can understand what you're
saying. Yeah, I think it's just because it's so hard to excel there. Like, pretty much anybody's going to be doomed to make some mistakes in that role. So even if BJ is great, there will be some growing pains as well. But yeah, he'll probably be pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, he showed more than enough last year for him to be one of those guys where a lot of Texas fans, he's one of those examples where Texas fans point to, yeah, he might not have gotten the starts at safety or at nickel or even at Joker. He might not have started, he might not have been there on the very first snap, but he played a ton, and when he was on the field, he was not this freshman that was sort of targeted and was constantly a weak point. He was the strength of the defense last year, and there's no reason to believe that that will not be the case again this year.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I thought last year I had him graded as one of the better defensive players on the team, even though he was a true freshman, so I'm very high on him, and I don't want anybody to be mistaken about that.
Yeah, and that's really all this, and it's kind of hard to, at this point, just with how we wield our defensive backs and sort of cross-training with the nickelback and the safety positions and the rover and joker, makes it kind of hard to discuss the corners and that situation without talking more about the safeties. This is the only spot on the defense where you've got both of your starters from last year back. You got Brandon Jones and Caden Stearns are still going to be the guys, the deep safeties. But then you have the issue at Joker, at Rover. And this is where sort of having the 2018 class be so defensive back heavy, why we have so much of this talent. You've got guys like DeMarvion Overshown, who has been getting tons of practice hype basically since he stepped on campus. As he's a headhunter, I mean, you saw it in the spring game with him laying out. Who was it that he hit pretty hard? Was it Roschon Johnson or Casey Thompson? The guy you're not supposed to hit.
Oh, yeah, the quarterback. I think it was Casey.
Yeah. And DeMarvion Overshown is out here trying to lay him out in the spring game. So he's just one of those headhunter guys. We haven't been able to get him on the field because we have so much stacked talent at safety and at Joker with B.J. Foster playing there. We're, now that we've got P.J. Locke graduated, now that we've got some more room, basically, you aren't having to pick, do I want B.J. Foster or do I want DeMarvion Overshown? We're giving ourselves the opportunity to be able to have both of those guys on the field while, again, not removing the Cooks, the Greens, the Jamesons, the Jones, Stearns. You just have so much talent here that we had a huge logjam, and it was becoming a problem, especially for DeMarvion Overshown, who went through his sort of offseason rumors of possible transfer because he wasn't seeing the field despite how much talent he seems to have. So there's just so much going on in the defensive backfield, so many guys, that it's really hard to, I guess, discuss these guys as single position.
Right, yeah. I mean, they all cross-train. I would feel confident with, I mean, Foster, Overshown, any of them playing the two traditional safety roles. I really like Chris Brown as well. I think he could step in if Stearns were to miss a game. You put Chris Brown back there. I don't even know that we would skip much of a beat. Just because, I mean, I'm high on so many guys in that room. But yeah, I think Overshown will definitely have a role to play this year. There's been a lot of talk about getting 6, 7, 8 DBs on the field. I don't know how often that's actually going to happen. But regardless, with injuries and potential targeting penalties for these headhunters, I think that it's really good that we have the ability to rotate these guys in and plug and play anywhere. So yeah, it's just a great group. I mean, in the spring, one of my bold predictions was that Foster, Stearns, and Brandon Jones were all going to make like the Big 12 safety roster, right? Which would be crazy if you had three guys from one team make it. And yeah, quick shout out to Brandon Jones because he's really good. And I think he's actually a little bit underrated by segments of our fan base.
Now, I wanted to bring up just with sort of going back to Josh Thompson, just talking about all the different guys on the field. He brought up during his player availability during fall practice, he claims that he's actually faster than Devin Duvernay, which I guess I don't think I've seen that from him on the field. And
well, the big,
it might just be sort of the case of playing nickel. You don't get to show off straight line speed because the guys you're covering are generally sort of the short distance quickness type of guys. But I really think that CDC needs to make it happen where pre-game before LA Tech or something, we have Devin Duvernay and Josh Thompson do a heads up 40 yard dash.
Have them run out of the tunnel with the, I don't know what it's called, but like they have 100 kids run across the field or whatever. just let Duvernay and
have him run
Thompson
with the kids.
Smoke all the 10 year olds. No, but Thompson, there's the play that I remember where he got to show off his wheels was actually Deshaun Jameson's punt return against Kansas State last year. Because if you go back and watch the replay, Thompson is in there. I mean, I don't know what the position is called, but he was blocking essentially, and he ends up just like running down Jameson to celebrate with him and stuff. So yeah, he's definitely fast. I also loved,
and Jameson is not a slow guy either. He's pretty quick too.
Not at all. So yeah, I think Thompson is more about just whether he fits into our nickel role, like what Orlando does, you know, because that requires you to be so physical and be able to cover. I mean, so the play that always sticks out in my mind is one, I think it was the first touchdown OU scored in the Cotton Bowl last year. Like PJ Locke is covering his guy and they're running essentially like an option, and Kyler Murray sprints outside the pocket, right? So PJ Locke is stuck trying to decide whether to cover his guy in the end zone, the running back for the option, or Kyler Murray. Like, there's no right decision to make there, you know? So that's just what I mean by it can be a role that ends up kind of on its own with no great decisions to make. But anyways, I think that Josh Thompson might just struggle with some of that side of it and not as much the actual pure coverage or, like, physical traits like speed and stuff.
Well, I guess while we're talking about it, just since we've been talking about who's getting on the field when, in the event that sort of eight defensive back situation does arise, who do you think those eight defensive backs are? I mean, I think it's pretty obvious Jones and Stearns are your guys deep. So you got six others. You're looking at Cook and Green are your outside guys. At Rover and Joker, I think you got Overshown and Foster. It will probably slide into that position. And then I think at nickel, that is where you find a lot of space for Josh Thompson to have an impact. And then that next guy, I imagine, would be Deshaun Jameson. But I just don't know how all this fits together. What situation, what sort of package the offense needs to be in to make that a reality. I just don't know.
Yeah, I think
there's just so much going on.
I think I'd want Chris Brown out there just because he has a little bit more of a – he's a little bit bigger than some of those guys. He's actually similarly sized to Gary Johnson, even though he's a safety. I mean, Johnson was small for a linebacker, but I think that experience could also be valuable just because he's a little bit older. So I throw him in there. But, yeah, it's a lot of positions to fill, but we got a lot of talent to do it. But we'll see how often that actually gets put into place. You have to get to third and long in order to run a third and long package. We weren't great at getting into third and long last year.
You talked about Keandre Coburn. You said that he was probably the guy who set the ceiling for this team, making him more or less the most impactful, or set the ceiling for the defense, making him the most impactful defensive player. Who do you think just in general is our best player on defense as of right now?
That's a really good question, and I kind of waffle between Stearns, Foster, Brandon Jones. And I think I'm actually going to go with Jones. I think that he has really improved a lot of his positioning and his ability to read an offense. Last year, I think he made a major jump there. And I think that he has the athleticism to really capitalize on that and really get downhill quickly. He's a great tackler. He takes really good angles. That's something that Stearns struggled with at times last year. So I expect that Stearns is going to fix some of those issues that in his game. But I'm going to go with the senior that has all the athleticism in the world and seems to be putting it together.
Yeah, and you talk about him being sort of underrated by a lot of Texas fans. I think he's one of those guys where last year, if it's not for Brandon Jones being back there and sort of more or less anchoring the defense and sort of quarterbacking the defense, I don't think you get to see the breakout year that Caden Stearns has without the stability of Brandon Jones. And I think that was evident in the games where Brandon Jones was out. It felt like Caden Stearns got sort of pulled out of the game a little bit more. It didn't give him the freedom to make those plays. So I think Brandon Jones would definitely be my pick. Maybe not. He might not be the best athlete, but I think the mental part, the mental side that he brings to this defense makes him the best player on the field for our defense. With that, let's start talking about the schedule, or continue talking about the schedule, I guess. We talked about it last time. Left off, sitting there, I believe you had us at 5-1 with our lone loss being to LSU, which makes sense considering I'm going to the LSU game, so it makes sense that I'd be at the only one we lose.
Yep.
So picking up from there, you have us just having beaten OU. Our next game is against the meme team. That is the Kansas Jayhawks. Not only do you have your usual Texas lost to Kansas or whatever memes, but you have Les Miles, who himself I think is the most memeable coach in college football. We get that game at home, though. We don't have to go to Kansas to play Kansas this year, which is where it seems like we struggle most against Kansas. So I guess off the cuff, what's win or lose against Kansas?
I think we win that one. I'm not too worried about Kansas. I think that we'll be fine. It's just a big talent advantage, memes aside. And yeah, honestly, there's not that much more to say about it. They got Puka Williams. Their offense might be decent, but at the end of the day, we're going to be better. We're not going to throw untimely interceptions, and hopefully we won't. I think last year we gave up an onside kick, right? Yeah. Which that's the reason the game was close last year, but hopefully we won't do that this time.
Yeah, I guess spinning off of that, what do you think, what's the timeline for Les Miles to get Kansas to a place where we feel like they might be competitive when they do come to Austin?
Well, they have had a couple, bigger commits, like 4-stars and stuff, which, I mean, for Kansas, that's good. but, Puka Williams and I know there were a couple other guys from Louisiana, and this year they're recruiting. I mean, they were ahead of us until until like July. Of course, they had like 20 guys committed, so that's why. But timeline, I mean, I think that assuming that Herman pans out and doesn't go full Charlie in the next couple of years, I don't think there is a timeline where Les Miles gets them to be competitive. I think that Les Miles is more stepping into that role just to get them back to like a normal team, and hopefully we won't be competing against normal teams, right? Like, we'll be competing against the best of the best. But I think that they could be pretty decent here in about 3 years or so. They just have to, they have so many JUCOs they've signed over the last couple of years. Their roster's kind of a mess. They have to bring in a lot of guys for several years straight in order to really restock.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of why they brought Les Miles in, and was less to actually build up the team overall and really, yeah, just refill the roster. But do you think Kansas comes in with an extra bit of anger given that we stole one of the most important pieces to their basketball team as of today, since we're recording on Friday?
You know, let them come in as angry as they want. I'm still not scared of any chickens. One kind of funny thing about Kansas, though, is I met some guys from Kansas, some fraternity brothers at a conference. This was probably like a year and a half after the infamous Kansas game. And like we're introducing ourselves, and we're like, yeah, we're from Texas. And immediately, they just got this huge smile on their face and just like started laughing. And we couldn't do anything. It was awful. It was traumatic. But I mean, that win was like their Super Bowl, because it just doesn't happen very often. And I don't expect them to do it again anytime soon.
Speaking of losing to Kansas, our next game would be at TCU, who got got to have the albatross around their neck of losing to Kansas last year. Do you think TCU bounces back, and what are you expecting out of that game for us?
I think TCU will be better. The at the end of the day, I don't know who their quarterback is going to be, and I don't think they have any really great options. And that, like, some people are saying TCU is like a sleeper for the conference and stuff. I don't buy that, but like, sure, I probably like 8 wins or so. Even though I've said all that negative stuff, if we're doing season predictions, I'm actually going with a loss here. It's in Fort Worth. I think their defense will be better. I think that we're going to have a game where some of that youth really comes to bite us, or a game where Sam is injured. And looking at the schedule, this kind of fits that bill as well as any others. And I mean, Patterson loves to play Texas and get up, try to beat us down.
Yeah, I think I would differ from you here, just because we saw last year, I mean, TCU did threaten Ohio State. It was a close game with us for most of the game, but they looked completely lost once Sean Robinson went out with an injury, and he's not back this year. And right now there's still question marks about who their quarterback's going to be. It looks like it could actually be Alex Delton, who just transferred from Kansas State, and he played against us.
Yeah,
when we played against Kansas State, and he was not good. It was a really bad situation. I think just having that issue alone, like, everything else about TCU can be back to being what it was in 2014, and I think just having that problem at quarterback is enough to keep them from really being the dark horse candidate that people talk about them like they are, to win the Big 12. So personally, I have that one as a win, just because of all of the uncertainty at this moment. Obviously, throughout the season, if Alex Delton turns out to be a god and it was just the Purple Wizard was holding him back or whatever, that might change, but as of right now, because of all the problems at quarterback for TCU, I would say that we're winning at TCU. That's not my game where we have that hiccup of losing to a worse team.
Yeah, and I kind of think that TCU is one of the teams that could actually just beat us in the conference. Like, I really think that them and OU, and like I guess Iowa State, are the teams that like we could lose to them, and I wouldn't feel like, oh, we blew it, you know, like we really messed up. And a lot of that just comes down to Patterson and his ability to be prepared for these games. So, hey, we'll see. But, I mean, Jalen Reagor's great. He's going to have a big year. I know their running back room is looking pretty good. But, yeah, that the QB is definitely an absolutely, like, massive question mark.
After TCU, we got that bye week like we talked about last episode. We got that sort of 3-4 packs broken up by bye weeks. So get that bye week, 8 games into the season. Looks like you're thinking 6-2 is sort of your expectation 8 weeks into the season. I think I'm looking 6-2 as well. A little bit different avenue, because I think our losses came earlier in the year. But it looks like we're both at 6-2. With that, we return to the once again purple wizardless Kansas State Wildcats. Be welcoming in a new head coach, and he'll be sort of this sort of little sideshow rivalry that we seem to have going. That's really more just a point of frustration about seemingly never being able to just handle Kansas State, no matter what the talent differential is. So what do you think? And this is the one. I couldn't remember Parker Braun's name last week. I can't remember the name of Kansas State's new coach.
Chris Klieman.
But Klieman, yes, Chris Klieman. What do you think of his first visit to Austin? Is he going to be a happy guy on the flight home, or?
No, I would not expect him to be happy. I think that he might actually be in for the biggest rebuild in the Big 12, which is weird to say with Kansas being Kansas. Okay, so it's probably not actually as big as Kansas now that I'm thinking about it. But at the same time, he has to do some major roster overhauls. He's coming from North Dakota State, right? Like, he's won a lot of football games. I think he's a good coach. I think he fits really well with them. But I think that his rebuild might be longer than some of those other timelines. Like, Les Miles is at least a known name and everything, so he'll be able to attract people purely off that. But Kleiman's just has a really rough situation that he's inherited. So, yeah, I think that that could be one of our bigger wins next year, if we're talking about point differential.
Definitely. I guess from there, we travel to probably, in my opinion, if you ask me, nationwide, the most underrated home field advantage in the country. Travel to Ames to face Iowa State. Brock Purdy is back, but Hakeem Butler and David Montgomery, their standout wide receiver and running back from last season, really the past couple seasons, those guys are both gone. Purdy is back, though. I'll start on this one. I think this one is where we pick up our second or third loss on the year. Just because even though Matt Campbell hasn't gotten it done as head coach at Iowa State yet against Texas, I am just always wary of any game that we play in Ames, especially when I expect Iowa State to be good, be ranked at this point in the season, I would fully expect without looking at their schedule. So I think a ranked versus ranked game in Ames with the crowd the way they are, even for a bad Iowa State team, to have a good Iowa State team, a Texas team that they always like beating, I think that's going to be a huge game for Iowa State, and I think just our sort of reaction to that, I think that's going to be a game we drop. But like you said, it's against a team where you're not going to feel bad. Obviously, you're going to feel bad about losing to them, but you're not going to feel like sort of embarrassed by it. This is the other team in the conference, one of the other teams in the conference where you go, okay, like they were pretty good last year. This is not unexpected.
Yeah. I mean, I always say it's going to be good next year, I think. I actually buy the Brock Purdy hype. Matt Campbell's a terrific coach. I've got us with a win. I do agree that, I mean, Ames seems like an awesome atmosphere for college football. And it might not be an overstatement to say that last year our game against them was the biggest game of their program's history. And this year it could be even bigger depending on how everything falls before then. But ultimately, Iowa State and Texas, in my mind, are very similar programs. I think we run a lot of very similar offenses, and generally the cultures seem pretty similar. And so whenever that happens, a lot of times it just comes down to the fact that we're going to out-talent them every time. You know, like, they're very well-developed, but we're just going to have better athletes, and, I mean, hopefully that translates to just being better players. I think that we've kind of seen that the last 2 years where we've just picked up very solid wins, not blowouts, but also games where the outcome was never really in question.
After Iowa State, we've got a trip to Waco to face Baylor. Matt Rhule's got, I think they're sort of teetering on the edge of actually being consistently solid, and that could all fall apart if Matt Rhule has another big flirt with the NFL like he did this past offseason. So what do you think, win or lose against Baylor?
I got us with a win here. I mean, he's done a good job rebuilding that Baylor program because, I mean, it was a mess, and he's brought them from, what, like one win to six in a year or whatever. So I like Matt Rhule. I like Charlie Brewer. I think they'll be good, but at the end of the day, like, just having very raw athletes can only take you so far.
And I guess now that since you bring up Charlie Brewer, which number do you think is higher? Number of total points scored in that game or number of times that the announcers mention that his dad and uncle played at Texas and he was never offered by Texas.
I mean, you got to hope that the announcers would have gotten some feedback on that and they won't bring it up every time, but...
Just not a whole lot of faith that that's
going to
happen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I guess if I had to choose, I'm probably going with points, but only because I expect their defense to be really bad and their offense to be good. But if we're talking about, like, an average game, I'd probably go with the Charlie Brewer scholarship talk.
Yeah. Finally, the last game of the season is going to be Black Friday against Texas Tech, somehow scheduled again for 11 a.m. Why anyone would want to deal with that on Black Friday? At least it's not in Kansas, so it shouldn't be quite as bitterly cold as it was last year against the Jayhawks. But Texas Tech, 11 a.m. game, everyone's going to be full of turkey expectations on that one.
So Texas Tech, for the purposes of this preview, I'm going with a loss, I guess. Actually, no, we're going to win that game. I was kind of thinking that, like, Bowman might tear us up, and then I realized I was thinking, well, Kingsbury is going to scheme some points, and I'm, no, I don't think that they'll be ready next year, new coach.
Yeah, and especially just from my familiarity with Matt Wells when he was coach at Utah State, and for those of you who don't know, my G5 team, by way of the fact that I graduated from there, is Colorado State. So I have familiarity with the Mountain West. I do keep up with what's going on, not as well as I do with Texas, just because smaller brands are harder to keep up with if you're not right there. But Matt Wells was very up and down at Utah State. One year they'd win 10 games and challenge for the conference. The next year it'd be 4 wins with very minor roster changes. So it'll be interesting to see which version of Matt Wells comes through, considering Utah State was pretty good last year, especially on offense. Jordan Love was one of the best quarterbacks in the country, and probably the best one whose name no one who wasn't a hardcore fan had ever heard of. But, well, Mason Fine probably gets an argument there too, but he's on that sort of level. It'll be interesting to see which version of Matt Wells shows up, but I agree, just the amount of change, that switch from a true air raid to more of the... more in line with sort of the power spread that we run is going to be an interesting one. I don't think Alex Bowman is the quarterback for that type of system either. So that further sort of complicates the matter. He's already shown a worse injury history than Sam Ellinger has, playing in an offense that is not designed to punish the quarterback quite as much as Wells' offense leans on the quarterback to move around a bit. So I don't see that one being a loss.
Yeah, and also, okay, well, I was going to say, the thing that's kind of underrated about this new Tech staff is they don't have David Gibbs. You know, like, he's the guy that, for the first time in forever, brought their defense to the point of being decent. And between losing him and Dakota Allen, their defense is probably going to take a step back next year. And, I mean, yeah, Texas Tech without any kind of defense is normal, and normally we're able to fare pretty well. So
I think that leaves you at 10-2 in the regular season, if I'm counting correctly. Puts me at sort of a 9-3, 10-2. I couldn't really decide on that LSU game.
Yeah, I'm at the same point, like teetering between 10-2 and 9-3. I think that, like, if we're including a bowl game, my projection is 10-3. Like, that's basically my prediction for the season is 10-3, not including a conference championship game.
Well, now you mentioned conference championship game. Let's talk about conference championship game. 10-2, 9-3. With one or two, well, probably two at most of those losses in a three-loss season, you're saying two of those losses are coming against Big 12 opponents. Does that get us to the conference championship game? And if it does, who do you expect we'll be facing? I feel like there's going to be an obvious answer here, but, you know, just in case there's any intrigue to this prediction.
Yeah. Well, in my mind, we're facing OU, and it does, because I think that we beat Iowa State, which would give us a tiebreaker. So even with two losses, if that's the case, I don't see Iowa State and Oklahoma only having one conference loss. And so I think that, like, obviously if we go, what is it, 8-2 in the conference, and Iowa State is 8-2, then we would get in over them. So yeah, I think that we'll get there. And I think that it'll be disappointing if we don't. I think that that's kind of the minimum expectation in my mind, is like 9-3 in the conference. I'd put the absolute floor for the season at like 8 wins, but yeah, it's definitely possible that we do a lot better and win like 11 games in the conference. That's just not where my mind is at.
Definitely.
Yeah. Are you kind of on the same page? I know for the regular season, we're kind of there together, but I assume that you're thinking the same for the championship game.
Yeah, I am thinking the same. It would not surprise me now that I'm sort of being tasked with really directly thinking about it. This feels like one of those years where it could get weird, where you could have like a three-team tiebreaker going on, where you've got a 7-2 in conference OU, a 7-2 in conference Texas, and a 7-2 in conference Iowa State, all having lost to each other. Iowa State beats Oklahoma, we beat OU, or
OU beat, well, no, oh. RP's, we beat Hold Oklahoma, on. They beat Iowa State, and Iowa State beats us.
Yes, that sort of weird circular thing going on there, and then you sort of have your issues elsewhere. Especially with, I'm not buying in on Jalen Hurts just stepping in to the same level as Kyler Murray or Baker Mayfield. I mean, it's Lincoln Riley, so the offense is going to be good. But it took Kyler Murray being a Heisman winner to bail them out of several shootouts last year. I don't think Jalen Hurts has that sort of carry the team mentality or that ability to really just play hero ball like that. And I do not expect Alex Grinch, even if he is actually a better defensive coordinator than Mike Stoops, with the just absolute lack of talent and with the injuries that are piling up on their defense already, I don't expect him to be able to just fix everything, wave a magic wand and correct all that. So I think they have their issues. Iowa State's basically the opposite version of that. They lost a whole bunch on offense. Obviously, Purdy's still back, so that'll help float the offense. The defense is still going to be good because that's the staple of the Matt Campbell Iowa State regime, is extremely good defense. And then obviously us with our inexperience on defense in a lot of areas, I think that just sort of the up and down roller coaster that youth brings there, this seems like sort of the perfect storm to where you could set up for one of these circular tiebreakers with three teams all deserving of two spots.
Yep, and hopefully it doesn't go how it did last time in 2008.
We don't speak of last time. Yeah. but that does it for our preview of the 2019 Texas Longhorns and their schedule for the upcoming season, which means the next time you hear from us, yes, indeed, it will finally be game week, and we'll be talking about Louisiana Tech. We're so close to the Texas football season, and thankfully that last little hump for us to overcome is week zero. So we'll have real life FBS and even P5 college football to watch. I don't know about you, but I'm definitely tuning in for Florida versus Miami on Saturday.
I kind of think that I'm going to have to, you know, what else am I going to do with a Saturday in the fall?
You just need that little taste to get you hooked the entire rest of the season. We've all just been sort of jonesing for that to come back, but anyway, make sure to check us out on Twitter at the FTH Podcast. We're about to reach the conclusion of our top 25 plays of 2018. I think this Saturday, it'll probably have been this past Saturday by the time this releases, we'll be sharing number two. And if you're still listening, I'll just give you the straight up spoiler. It's either Lil Jordan Humphrey against Texas Tech or Dicker the Kicker. And you'll have to find out exactly which one. But We're posting that. Number one will be posted during week zero. But thank you all for listening. Until next time, hook 'em.